Hey everybody, this is Craig Baldwin, partner at Upsource for another episode of Creative Outcomes, where today we're going to try to tackle the very large, nebulous concept of value-based pricing. This is a topic that's thrown around quite a bit. There's a lot of research and literature, especially by a couple dominant authors in the creative agency space, or just more broadly professional service space. I will not profess to anyone listening to be an absolute pricing expert, but over the course of almost the last 15 years, given that Upsource has worked with well over 500 clients, at least 250 agencies in particular, we have seen many different types of pricing models or commercial arrangements, and have seen patterns about the success of those arrangements, some being easier to manage and fulfill, some being more challenging, some resulting typically in more margin or less, and really thinking about what are the strengths of your own organization, your own agency, and what may be the best model for you. So to talk about that today, I first just want to set some very simple terms to the concepts we're going to cover. And this will not be a comprehensive video on all of the different ways to charge clients. We're going to focus to the best of our degree on value-based pricing. But before we get there, we need to talk about how we charge and what are the options available to us. And you know, most fundamentally, and this starts at the very beginning, we are selling, in many cases, almost all cases, capacity, human capacity, to our clients. They are paying for us to do some amount of work. Now, I understand that some of you may say, well, wait a minute, maybe AI is doing work, or maybe someone else is doing work. Totally fine, right? And we can talk about how maybe that might differentiate the pricing model. But to date, for the last 100 plus years of marketing agencies or advertising agencies, especially since the advent of the newspaper, we're going to talk about how those clients who are buying our services are really just paying for our input of time and our specialization or our expertise associated with that time that are connected to the deliverables that we give to them. Now, of course, it is possible that our clients are paying directly for, or they perceive to be paying directly for, an output or a deliverable, and they or you have assigned value to that. A big part of that pricing exercise may still be, how much time does it take me and how do I value that time? And in the last case, they may purely, they being the client, may purely be paying for the outcome or value your work has created. And this is where value pricing would come into play. Now, I will be honest, this is challenging for the majority of professional service organizations, at least in the strict sense of outcome or value-based pricing. But we're going to get into some of the nuance and why that term value-based pricing is thrown around quite a bit. Excuse me while I clean my glasses. And how the strict definition may not include how it's perceived within the broader professional service community. So when you break those three components down into the different structures, which are probably sitting on an SOW with your client or a proposal, whatever it may be, the simplest would be time and materials. So we are charging for that time. This could, by the way, also incorporate some cost plus model where we're basically saying, Craig, I as an employee cost $50 an hour to the organization I work at, and I would like to charge $100 an hour for my work such that the gross margin on a marginal incremental hour is 50%, right? That's just an example. Time and materials is super easy to... Let me back up because some will disagree. But generally speaking, for the majority of agencies who are already tracking time, already have set projects, allocating that time across the, or the teams allocating that time across the projects, time and materials can be easy to bill against, right? So if I think about the supporting functions of the agency, whether that's the PM, the account manager, or my internal finance team, or external in the case of if you use someone like Upsource, if I'm just taking the hours worked, or some bucket of them, so it could be hourly, could be a day rate, could be a sprint over the course of a couple weeks, could be a monthly rate, especially if I think about quote unquote retained employees, or you know, much more of a outsourced model in terms of headcount, we are going to be able to bill for those hours in a very clean way. Here's the hours that worked. We're going to bill those directly to the client. Client, please pay us when you can, right? Easy enough. The next one would be a fixed fee or project base. Also very common within the creative services industry. This is effectively, and it tends to be the client flagging what they believe the value of the work they're asking for is worth. Let's use a website design and build as an example. And a group of agencies coming around and getting an RFQ response or an RFP response for the ability to respond to the client's needs. You look at their scope and their brief and what they're looking for, and you can build out your own assessment of how many hours you think it might take internally. But effectively what you're going to do is charge a fixed price to the client because that's how they value that work. This, for some agencies, is fantastic. Some agencies are operationalized to deliver on this type of work, can do it in a repeatable and scalable fashion, and in some cases can drive an outsized margin on any one project because of how great they are at delivering the work on time, on budget, and to the client's satisfaction. Other agencies, many agencies, and I've been there myself, have a really hard time with this particular model because while we may agree to a price just because we want to win the work, it may or may not be enough budget for us to deliver or meet the client's expectations. Client's expectations usually being a really tricky variable of this whole thing. And we may go over the allocated budget, at least what we've allocated internally. And as we continue to do that, the margin that's available for us is less and less and less and less. And sometimes we may even spend more time than we certainly charge for, but we may also eat up all the margin that we actually had planned in the relationship. And now we're quote unquote losing money on that particular project. So it can go either way. It is still a very predominant commercial structure or format that is used in the industry. And we'll talk a little bit about how value-based may be different. The next one is retainer-based. We usually see this as monthly. This can effectively be a reservation on the time of a set of employees or one employee who is delivering work. Now, how does that come across? Does the retainer exist as a reservation on time and there's a certain amount of deliverables that are required as a part of that? Does the client have to use those hours? And if they don't, do they get refunded or do they still have to pay that rate no matter what? There's nuance there, which, you know, we may consider this a different type of arrangement depending on the answer to those questions. But all of that is common in the creative services industry, particularly for PR firms, are where we see the most quote-unquote retainer-based models deployed. That is a traditional model for that type of agency. And certainly if you could use the use it or lose it approach, that is a fantastic way. Now, of course, the question becomes if the client is asking for more than what is typically offered within the retainer, do you continue to provide quote unquote more without charging more, or do you charge incrementally beyond the initial retainer? As long as you're covered and that is a part of the commercial agreement, then great, keep going. If not, it's also a way that you could lose targeted margin within a relationship pretty quickly, right? Value-based pricing. So this is what we're here to talk about. This is really comes down to a known outcome. If we think about this in the very strictest definition, this was really originated, at least as I understand it, to be from lawyers who could tie the outcome of the case. Think about a class action lawsuit, and take a chunk or a percentage of that outcome as a part of their fee. That is very clear cut, right? And especially in the legal world, there are more opportunities for those very objective measures on the result. That is less so the case in the creative services industry. Now, you could say certain forms of media, or pay for performance, or pay for leads, or pay for wins. There are ways to do it for sure. And in fact, an organization that I worked for once upon a time in my career, some of their most profitable relationships were outcome, they would call it outcome based or value based. Now, it comes with risk, right? So, as a part of any calculations that you might do internally to assign a value to the proposed outcome, if you do not hit that outcome, or if you miss it by a wide margin, but certainly you've spent a lot of time and capacity, as we talked about, or maybe even a lot of money. If this is a media contract and you have hard costs associated with the advertising or whatever it may be, there is risk if you're not able to hit the desired metrics or outcomes. And so this is certainly a more advanced form of pricing and is best used in situations where you have some experience, you have some data on what has worked or has not worked, and you have, to the best of your ability, really managed the possible outcomes which could occur. So you've bounded your risk, so to speak, if you can. And we'll get into that more here in a second. Hybrid pricing would just be some combination of the above, which, by the way, also very common. So I may charge for media as an example, and any direct client in client wins or purchases which occur because of my media up to a certain point and beyond, I may actually take more money from my client because I just drove outsized performance or outsized success, and I can tie that directly to the work that I've done. And so a good example there would be some type of I guess you could call it time and materials, you could call it a project base, but you basically have this variable pricing mechanism around the media and the upcharge which you may apply. And then for outperformance, you may capture some additional dollars as a part of that. That's a good example. Lastly, there are just other ways to get it done. And I'm sure each of you who are listening to this today has seen these or has participated in them. I know that I have. You could barter. So, in fact, from time to time, we still do this to this day at Upsource, where I provide my services to you, you provide your services to me, and we just trade those services in kind, and we agree on the related value, and we're happy with that trade or outcome. Equity-based arrangements, this seems to be more common for creative brand, certainly development shops or engineering shops. If it comes to building an application for a startup, this is kind of more of the venture studio model, if you will, where you're going to trade that capacity, that labor for upside in some venture. I will say to you, while everyone has probably heard a success story, excuse me, as it relates to this type of model, it's not one that we encourage our clients to take part in, because while we've heard about the success stories, I've seen very few of them personally. And so it is a very quick way to really lose money very quickly, or not really get paid for your time, your work, your effort, whatever it may be. And ultimately, we can only do that for so long until we need to see a return from our efforts in order to drive revenue and margin for the business. And then all you can eat subscription. So, I will say, and I actually did a little cheat here at the bottom when I was talking to chat and said, hey, how do you see a subscription and a retainer as different? I think this is just semantic in some case. I'm sure some people would disagree with me. Subscription might be more productized. I think in the world we live in today, people might view a subscription as I get a defined set of deliverables or outcomes. It's a productized price that price is available to anyone, a very transactional model. That could or could not be, but sure, it's just another form of a retainer and vice versa. The retainer might be seen as more customized or more sort of, in terms of me taking the scope of work and providing a unique or bespoke price as determined by the relationship, sure. I will tell you that Upsourced, as an example, for many years when we provided accounting services to small businesses, we sat more in this subscription area, if these were the terms that we used to define it. And we produced or published pricing for a set range of deliverables. They tended to associate with the size of the client, because that usually represented some amount of complexity and effort for us. And anyone could consume them, basically, right? So you could look at that subscription. And to this day, really, we only charge a flat monthly price. Now, we have since moved to more of a customized pricing model where we have unique conversations with potential clients. We determine their needs with them. And behind the scenes, we are trying to determine what is the overall amount of effort associated with the relationship on a monthly basis and the deliverables they're asking for. We've been doing that for a long time and we've had a lot of success. Now, ultimately what we are doing underneath the hood is still trying to get a sense of what is the time or capacity associated with the deliverable and get a best estimate on what that's going to be. And in situations where we may know some more about the client or their budget or perceived complexity, I'll say, especially early on in client relationships, we may add some buffer to that price. And sometimes we nail it, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we overbid it and the client still signs up and we make a ton of money, but it's relative, right? I mean, it's not like we're getting rich off of any one client. Overall, what we are trying to do is manage a portfolio of many, many, many clients and drive a target project margin, which I think is the most important takeaway I want people to get from this particular discussion. And then lastly, I do want to touch on project versus recurring, because this in particular is not only something that's been a hot button topic in the industry for quite a long time, but really since, and you could say further back, but since the advent of SaaS software, where now we're all accustomed to paying per month or annual plans or whatever, and really organizations are focused on driving a lifetime value of the client as opposed to a value of the project or the scope of work which I delivered, it does change things a little bit. But what I will say to you is, for those organizations who are driving more recurring revenue, it doesn't necessarily mean they're more successful per se, and it tends to come with a lower ceiling on overall revenue, but it does establish a floor. And when I live in a project-based world and I'm delivering services as an agency purely on project-based, my floor is zero. I mean, I have truly go to zero risk in my business, because if all of those projects dry up, I'm now commanding $0 in revenue and I'm completely starting from scratch. Now, the flip side of that is I can grow very quickly. So if I add many projects, I can compound those, or I should really say combine those and grow much faster than is typical for a recurring based organization. And we can get into why that's usually the case. But establishing that floor, that stability of predictable revenue through a recurring mean, whether that's something like a retainer, a subscription offering, a maintenance and support package, which would probably just be an example of a subscription offering. These are the types of things which separate great agencies from average agencies, in my opinion, and allow us to free up more time to take bigger swings or do perform more risk-seeking behavior, which could drive outsized growth over time. Again, that deserves its own podcast, its own blog post. There are many people who talk about these topics that would consider themselves experts, but it's important to at least address that in an elementary way on this particular conversation. So let's go back to what we're really here to talk about, excuse me, which is not fixed fee project-based. It's value-based pricing. I said earlier that it is many, we come across many organizations who get excited about this topic and want to value-based price, and especially in situations where maybe their business is struggling or they're tired of not actually scoping projects correctly and going over budget, feeling like they're losing money all the time, they think, well, if I could just do value-based pricing, it would solve all my problems. Well, it's rarely any one thing is going to solve all your problems, and I think we all know that. But, of course, when we're having trouble, we're always looking for silver bullets. What I will say to you is value-based pricing in its strictest sense, where we are tying our financial reward to some known outcome, is very hard to do. And in fact, most of us really aren't value-based pricing when we talk about it that way, right? Now, there is some nuance here, which I think has come from many of the thought leaders on value-based pricing, which is, well, what I'm really trying to say is, as opposed to only getting paid when the meter is running, so to speak, so when I'm actually delivering work and then sending you a bill afterwards for 3.5 hours of my time or 10 hours of my time or whatever that may be, I actually just want to lock you into an arrangement where we have agreed, where the market has accepted what the rate is for a certain amount of work I will deliver to you, and that could be work every month, or a certain amount of expertise I've told you I would provide to you on, in many cases, an all-you-can-eat basis. Now, what I will say is you may limit that. You may say, hey, you can only call me during these hours, or use some duration of those hours as part of the relationship. We're really still kind of getting back into a hourly conversation there, if we're getting to that, which is why actually at Upsource we don't cap the amount of hours. We tell our clients they can reach out to us as much as they want. Now, we don't really respond at any point at any time. We don't carry strict SLA terms around when we will respond, but it's generally accepted that we will respond 9 to 5 Eastern, Monday through Friday. And that is true, I think, of many agencies. And some may offer more, but probably charge a premium for it. But I think the thing to take away here is, in a value-based world, it's really about moving to getting paid for your expertise, getting paid for the quality or the impact of your deliverables. And it allows you to spend more time on creating value, quote unquote, for your clients, as opposed to only being able to charge them when you are delivering direct work. Now, at the end of the day, especially today, what is happening is, even an Upsource case, we're still going to go through the exercise of the inputs of time and materials. And so we are still doing what would really be considered some amount of cost plus process in order to come to a price, even though we're charging monthly and you may use us a bunch one month and not much the next. But in our case especially, there's still many deliverables associated with the work that we're doing. And we're going to go through that calculation to make sure that if we are going to take as much time as we think, can we still make the requisite margin on those activities? And then for anything above and beyond, which is, let's just talk about other things, and we don't know what those things could be in any given month, and then we'll probably have some buffer. But ultimately, that's where the quote-unquote value should come from, right? And so, is that value-based pricing? I guess you could say it is, right? I guess you could say it is. It's not in the strictest sense, which is, hey, if I help you drive $100,000 worth of business, I'm going to take $20,000 of that. To me, that's a very strict value-based pricing as originated in the legal profession many years ago. However, if there is some type of market rate for a certain set of activities or outcomes or expertise. So if one creative agency is known for delivering the world's best creative work, and they can deliver that work at a rate many, 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 many times for the same set of, I don't know, logo and branding identity, et cetera, as opposed to a much smaller firm, then yes, there's some value tied to that. The market values that work more than someone who is not them, right? But I think value-based pricing has taken on a life of its own. And as with most topics in life that grow in an outsized way, has become a hammer searching for a nail for many organizations. And the reason I say that is this. It's not to make you turn away from value-based pricing, because I think it is important to think about if you applied that lens to your pricing, if you're not doing it today, how would it change what you do? How would it change how you scope? How would it change the types of services you deliver? How would it change the relationship you have with your clients? Those are all very useful exercises to go through. And I encourage everyone to do that and to reevaluate that on a regular basis, right? However, at the end of the day, I will tell you, I don't care how you price. I don't care how you deliver the work. As long as you are obtaining a requisite project margin or client margin or value margin, whatever you want to call it, especially as it relates to the team that you are paying for each and every month, or the team and the tools and the other hard costs associated with that. And we can show an overall gross margin of 50% and above, I think you're doing pretty well. If you're below that, then we have to ask some hard questions about why is that the case? And is it due to our inability to execute properly? Is it due to compression and what the market is willing to pay for what we provide? Or is it due to a structural commercial makeup of how we're pricing and then agreeing to provide work, right? It could be all of those. And I think that's one of the most vexing parts of running an agency, and especially running an agency in today's environment, is we're constantly searching for many answers in a multivariate problem set. And it's very hard to find any one thing that really moves the needle. However, like all large problems in life, it's best to break them down into their raw components and work through them bit by bit and understand how each would impact the overall equation. So, with that, value-based pricing, is it a good thing? Yes, I think it is. Is it an overused term? Yes, I think it is as well, right? Are you really providing and charging for what is only your quote-unquote perceived value? Maybe, maybe not, right? But ultimately, any one agency can be successful at any of the above that we have here in this list. It comes down to what is the margin that you're able to drive on those. And if you can drive a 60% margin or 70% margin in your business, good for you. You are kicking butt. And so I hope that you can use each of these as tools in the toolbox to make you successful. Really, truly, the only thing I want you to take away beyond this conversation around value-based pricing is, what are you doing to manage risk within your clients or your projects as it relates to only having project-based revenue versus some type of recurring-based revenue? And to the extent that you don't have a lot of recurring revenue today, I would continue to think critically on how you could add it as a part of your overall makeup. So with that, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. I don't have a lot of fancy visuals for you. I don't have a lot of stunning conversation with my teammates or with a client. And if you want to talk about this at any point in time, you're welcome to reach out to me specifically, cbaldwin@upsourceaccounting.com, or just hit us up on the website. Of course, we hope you listen to additional episodes, so subscribe if you haven't already, and hope you have a great day.